ascend to godhood. I'm Chase.
And I'm Chase.
And welcome to the RTR Forward podcast. And no, it's not just me talking to myself. It's actually me and a physical other human being that happens to also be named Chase joining me today for this podcast. Say hello, Chase.
Hi, Chase.
Hello, Chase. So today we've got some pretty exciting things to talk about. But first, a word from our sponsor, which is no one. But if you'd like to sponsor us, please let me know. But currently, we are sponsored by viewers like you. So you can listen to, if you're listening to us on YouTube or you're listening to us on Spotify, we really appreciate it. If you're listening to us on Spotify, go ahead and give us a follow. Go ahead and jump over to YouTube, RTR Forward. We're on a YouTube channel called Parched MTG, which is like, I guess, our parent YouTube channel. But you can go over there and hit subscribe, listen to or watch our videos there, listen to us there. We've got stream highlights from my stream going up on our YouTube channel. I also stream, so if you want to watch me play Magic somewhat well, you can watch me typically on the weekends, 10 a.m. Central Time. You can watch me on Twitch. It's Parched MTG. We have Twitters, so if you want to follow the podcast Twitter, RTR Forward, if you want to follow my personal Twitter for memes, you can follow at Parched MTG. But yeah, so cool, you should do that. All right, so today, some pretty fun things. Mm-hmm. So Theros just came out. And by that, I mean Theros Beyond Turkey Bacon, because if you say death, apparently it gets your video demonetized on YouTube.
Okay.
Even though so I just said it. But yeah, so that just came out recently, so it's a pretty fun set. But we're going to kind of jump through some of the stories. So we haven't been to Theros in over 5-6 years, so we're going to go back to it, and we're going to talk about some of the lore. So today I have with us Chase the Lore Man. He loves lore.
I'm as you put it, or as I so eloquently put it at work the other day, I'm a lore whore. Yep. It doesn't matter the lore. I'm just really into it. I'm huge Dark Souls nerd, Greek mythology, you name it.
Yeah, so we've got ourselves a Greek mythology buff here to kind of attach some of the stories from the lore to some of the real life stories and legends and myths of Greece and Greek culture.
Hoping to bring some factual content here.
So yeah, I'm just gonna go ahead and just hand the floor to you. We're gonna talk about some of the background of Theros. So this is so basically our stories today are gonna focus on a few arcs. So we're gonna follow Gideon's story arc, Kythian as he was. We're gonna follow through Elspeth's original story arc back in the original Theros block with Xenokos's rise and all that. And then after that, we're going to talk about the more recent lore. So the lore from the most recent set where Elspeth is trying to make her way back up through the underworld. So let's talk about some of the background.
So, you know, again, I've told you this starting off. I'm kind of a MTG noob. I played a while back in college, and then with you and some other buddies, I started getting back into it again. So, and of course, as soon as I get into something, I get into it deep. So I started looking at some of the lore when you were like, hey, come do a podcast. I was like, sure. Wikipedia, everything, you know, and of course other sources, you know, but so something interesting I noticed is that they, what they seem to have done here is they've taken some of the actual like Greek mythology and for some of it, they have like the same name. It's like the same exact thing. And others, it's like kind of an allusion to something in Greek mythology. Like, for me, it's like Elspeth, I feel like she's kind of like a female Hercules, and then sometimes she's not. Same with Daxos. Everyone's like, oh, Daxos is Hercules, but, like, his story doesn't really line up with the real Hercules. But, like, then you have Nyx, which in this, in MTG, is just this ethereal, like, black void. That's essentially what Nyx is in actual Greek mythology. So it's kind of interesting their take on it and how some of the things are just spot on. It's the same thing. And then others are just, like I said, they're inspirations.
Yeah, so they kind of take the original like story content and kind of twist it and mm-hmm. like kind of, I mean, because a lot of sets where they've kind of used references of, you know, like with Innistrad, they use Gothic horror. They kind of take it and they twist it just a little bit
yeah.
and add that little bit of magic, like secret sauce in there.
Yeah, like the MTG, like, oh, this isn't the actual only plane kind of thing.
Yeah, so they kind of add their own little twists on it, and mm-hmm. we'll definitely see that as we go along. But yeah, so the history of Theros.
If we're talking history, I guess you got to start with the Titans, same which you kind of do in Greek mythology. So in Greek mythology, it starts with chaos, which is a primordial being, is what they're called in Greek mythology. There's a couple of them. I'm not going to sit here and name them off. But Nyx is actually one of the primordial beings. The first one is Chaos. There's Gaia, which is, you might know, as the Earth. And so in Theros, they kind of skip these primordial beings, except for Nyx, which is the same thing. Nyx in Greek, or I assume in Greek, means God of Night. The primordial beings in Greek mythology are like alive and not. They're like places and they're living beings at the same time. Some of them are. Nyx happens to be one of those. And so what I gathered from MTG is that they just kind of made it like an inky void, I guess, is what I've heard it described as.
It's like an inky void, like a house. Like, yeah. It's just like a house painted black that like the gods go into and like hang out.
Yeah.
Where like no one else is allowed. That's basically what Nyx is. It's just got stars and sparkles, and apparently like it also like they're part of Nyx because a lot of them have like the shimmery voids in like their clothing, mm-hmm. and like, I don't know, their skin and stuff like that. If gods even have skin, I don't even actually know.
Whatever you want to call it. It's skin-like, I guess. So in MTG, it seems they were like Titans. The Titans ruled all beforehand. And then what I read there is that in their world, the people were so scared of these essentially primal forces of nature that they were like, hey, we need anything powerful enough to stop this. And they believed hard enough that gods just kind of popped into existence, which is an interesting concept that they just kind of were like, hey, I'm alive now. I don't know if it happened all at once. You might be able to explain that to me, but it seems to me they all just kind of popped into existence and were like, lock the Titans up, which that is the exact same thing as Greek mythology. I mean, mostly the, you know, Zeus, Heliod, whatever, led the gods, their own pantheons, in defeating the Titans and throwing them into whatever underworld you're dealing with, depending on the mythology. In Greek, it's Tartarus, which is, again, it's a primordial being that's a place and a living thing at the same time. And in MTG, they threw them into the underworld and were like, lock them up and lock away the key with Clothis.
Yep. All the people of Theros really, really scared of all these primordial beings, the Titans, which we saw two of them in the most recent set. That's Uro and Kroxa. We're two big Titans, basically world eaters, and the oncoming wrath of storms, just big elemental forces that can just destroy everything in their wake. So the people came together and they just had, in Theros, you just have to believe real hard and eventually it'll happen. So they brought into existence these gods, ascended, and were strong enough and powerful enough to push back the Titans rampaging, and had them locked in the underworld with Clothis being their kind of keeper. And so that's a very important distinction, because the first time we see Theros, there is no... So Clothis is considered the god of destiny. So red and green, she takes on a stronger... I think it's considered a stronger green background, because she has the passion of justice with the red instead of the chaoticness of the red. But anyways, so at the time, you know, the Therosians did not have a green-red god. So that'll become important as we move on into the Elspeth arc. But it is interesting to notice that now we kind of know what happened to the Titans, and Clothis is currently at this point down there basically keeping watch over them and making sure that they don't escape back into the overworld. So...
And I kind of noticed that was kind of running theme, is that, like, so again, I said I went on a huge MTG, like, lore bender, and that I mostly, for this, when you asked me on, I mostly stuck to Theros, because that's what we were talking about. But in some downtime, I did go over some others, and MTG seemed to be kind of like the good guys can still lose, for the most part. I mean, it is a fantasy, but, like, the good guys do lose every now and then. Whereas in Theros, it's just like, I believe hard enough, and it happens. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, Theros is definitely like a plane of just, you can spin anything into existence if you believe hard enough. And as we continue on to these stories, we're going to be in several situations where things just happen because people believed. And it's pretty crazy that they kind of leaned on that for this set and this plane in general. But so unlike other planes in Theros, if you die, you go straight to the underworld. Whereas on any other plane, you just die and you're dead. Whereas Theros, you're stuck in the underworld, which you do have the possibility to escape. It's a place. You can leave the underworld and come back to the overworld. And that's where we get the returned, which is what they're called, which are like the zombie people, which have the golden masks. They are the returned because they died and they returned back to the overworld, which is pretty neat. So that's one key distinction. So if you die on Theros, you go to the underworld. It doesn't matter if you're from Theros or not. If you die on Theros, you go to the underworld. So keep that in mind as we move on through here. But first off, we're going to talk a little bit about our good old buddy Gideon. God rest his soul, passed away in the War of the Spark, was claimed by the curse that was supposed to kill Illyana. But Gideon's such a Chad, he had to save her. What a guy, Mr. Beefcakes. But so
manliest man.
He was the manliest man. But so Gideon used to not be called Gideon. His name was actually Kytheon. And Kytheon, aka Gideon, is from Theros. He's born on Theros. I believe he lived in the city of Akros. And basically where his story kind of starts, this is where, you know, like the official lore. So this is the lore from Magic Origins. So in Magic Origins, we went back and saw the beginnings and where certain key planeswalkers gained their sparks. So we really got to deep dive in some of their stories. But basically, where the story starts, Kytheon was arrested for stealing some food. He was originally like part of like, I guess, like the kids' boot camp for becoming an Akroan soldier. But then something happened. He ended up leaving that and becoming just like a thief in the night and just a little outlaw living his life. He's about 13 years old, but he basically stole some food and then they caught him and they sentenced him to 10 years, which is it's a long time for a 13-year-old kid stealing some food.
That is like some real harsh punishment right there. Like child soldier into thief into jail for 13 years. Like
so 10 years.
Oh, 10 years. Sorry.
But yeah, no, insane. And he was just like, he had to endure so much physical labor. They basically took him and they said, all right, so we got to get water into this city that's on top of a cliff. And the best way to do it is if you just sit here and pull these bars and spin these turn wheels to get the water in barrels to move back up the waterfall. That's basically what he did.
Wow.
For okay. 10 years.
Oh my God.
But not for 10 years, actually. He only did that for about 4 years. But so basically the story starts with him being in jail. It turns out that one of his irregulars, which Kytheon's irregulars are like his group of his ragtag group of boys that he does things with and I don't know, pillages and fights and all kinds of stuff in the dark side of town. But his buddy, his irregular, Drassus, was there imprisoned with him as well. And Kytheon's kind of a rebel. He doesn't like being confronted, and he's ready to fight if he's in that kind of situation. But basically, so he's doing using the like working on the pulley system, and they make him take a break, and he gets himself some water and some bread, and he finds out that there's this guy. Just this big brute in the jail yard named Ristos, and they call him the king, and he's just a big old brute that sends other brutes to do his dirty work, and he's the big guy on campus, and Kytheon's just eating his bread, enjoying his life as a imprisoned 13-year-old, and one of Ristos's brutes went up and tried to take his bread from him, said, you know, give me a tribute. And he went around to every other prisoner and like took some bread from them, and Kytheon's like, I'm not giving you bread, it's my bread. And so the brute attempts to fight Kytheon, and Kytheon beats the crap out of him, and I think a few other people just kind of join in, and he's just cleaning house,
just brawl city.
Yeah,
in exactly. Jail sale.
There's just a 13-year-old in like a midst of a bunch of like 30-year-old men just
who's
like
winning.
It was just destroying them, and puts a lot of them in the infirmary, but in the middle of that, the guards come and kind of break everybody up, and we get to meet one of our important characters, Hyksos, which is the warden, and he sees the potential in Kytheon and actually offers him to train under him. So at first, Kytheon's a little reluctant, but he eventually gives in, and for a four-year period, Kytheon spends his day as half student and half prisoner. So he spends his day training with his, I guess, master Hyksos,
mm-hmm.
And then the other half of the day he's just pulling the pulley system, getting that water back up to Akros.
He's gonna be strong though.
Yeah, no, he's building up those muscles, and Hyksos is actually teaching him some pretty interesting skills. And this they call it hyromancy, which is, I guess, they explain it as the art of using magic to turn any disadvantage in a battle into an advantage. So
gotcha.
Kind of as the story moves on, you find Kaithion finds himself in different situations where he maybe feels a little outmanned, but then he can use this thought magical process and this magical strategy to kind of offset some disadvantages that he could be facing.
Okay.
So he learns a lot, and time just passes. So he's about 17 at this point, and one day he's startled awake in his jail cell, hearing a massive amount of harpies attacking, like, just that area that they're in. So I assume from the descriptions of the story, they're kind of like at like the base of the waterfall, and up the waterfall is the city doors and everything. So they're making their way to the city to just attack and pillage. And harpies are, as described here, crazy little beasts that just want to consume and kill everything. So
pretty similar to Greek mythology.
Yeah. And so he's awoken out of his jail cell, and Hyksos, the warden, comes in, offers him. He says, "Hey, if you fight with us and save Polis and you survive, you're free to go. Your sentence is up. You've served it." And so Kaithion readily agrees, picks up a sword and a shield, and moves on. And him and a ragtag group of prisoners all go out and fight some harpies. And Kaithion uses that skill of hieromancy to chain some harpies up, killing some other harpies, mm-hmm. and saving his comrades and stuff like that. And as that's happening, he hears big amounts of footsteps and thumps as two cyclops appear and are attempting to break into the main gate. So Kaithion jumps down with it and is joined by his ragtag group of boys, the irregulars, and they come together and they stop both cyclopses and save the day. So he's able to go free, and he basically says at this point he and his friend, who are free now, it's Darsus.
Mm-hmm.
Or Drassus, has decided that they're going to keep watch over the city, so they go ahead and head up to the perimeter. So Kaithion goes north and Drassus goes south, and as Kaithion is making his way up the mountain going north, he runs into what looks like a big shrine. He's like, "Oh, this is weird," and then he sees a person standing in front of a statue that looks a lot like him, and it turns out it's Heliod, and Heliod's up there just chilling,
looking like him.
Yeah, just like, you know, just got a statue of himself, quite literally looking just like the statue.
Can I point out how impressive it is that he, like, is training half the time, the other half the time he's pulling water, and his irregulars are still, like, somehow keeping in touch with him for, like, 4 years while in jail? Like, 10 years in jail?
Well, see, from what I understand from the story is he just kind of, like, sees them, and he's like, "Hey!" And they're like, "Oh, hey, you're not dead!" And he's like, "Yep, I'm not dead. I was in prison."
And the whole time.
Yep, and they're like, "Oh, good thing I didn't put a bet on your life, because you're still alive." And
that's a heck of a Deadpool bet.
Yeah, just like friends, you know, just what friends do, put each other's bets on each other from dying.
Well, you know, we've all got those on at least one of us.
But yeah, exactly.
So he sees Heliod on a hill.
Yes, he does. And Heliod turns to him and commends him for his brave act of defending the city of Akros from the invaders, and puts him up for a new task. He says, "You'll be my champion, and what I need you to do for me is there's actually, so Erebos, He's getting loose. People keep escaping the underworld, and he's not. He keeps missing out on them. So yeah, he creates a titan. He's Erebos's titan. It's obviously not like an elder titan like the ones that were sealed away. He's a smaller version that moves forth and is going to claim back all the people that had escaped. And in the midst of that, he's also like destroying and killing people. So Heliod's like, "I don't like that. So I'm gonna give you my spear. Go kill that titan." So Kaithion takes up the quest and becomes Heliod's champion, takes the spear and runs to go find the titan, who's honestly, in the story perspective, he's not that far away. It was like just a little bit down the hill, like just a few hills down. He's just stomping along, just like poking bushes or something, I don't know. And
something like that.
So he comes to him, he confronts the titan, and look, guess what, his irregulars appear and they all fight the titan together, and he vanquishes the titan. The titan falls at the hands of Kaithion, and when you kill someone's titan, obviously you're not very happy. So Erebos emerges out of the underworld and is like, "Hey, don't do that." And Kaithion's like, "No, you." And then Kaithion's getting all cocky and he's like, "Aha, I've destroyed Cyclops and Harpies, and I just got out of jail for free, and I'm Heliod's champion, and I just killed this titan. I'm feeling full of myself." So he throws Heliod's spear at Erebos and challenging him. And Erebos just flicks his wrist and basically deflects the spear back at Gideon, or Kaitian at the time, and just nopes him, just like, no you, and just reflects it back at him. So that now that this spear that was hurtling maybe at 100,000 miles an hour, I don't know how strong Kaitian is now coming back towards Kaitian and his group of regulars, who are for some reason are all like within a very close right next to each other. And they're not moving. They're just preparing. They're bracing themselves.
As you do when you see a giant spear hurtling at you.
Yeah, exactly. And they didn't fan out or anything. So Kaitian, you know, still feeling cocky, thinks that he can use his new powers or his strength and invulnerability to kind of protect all of his friends. And to his avail, that did not work. And all of his friends were slaughtered mercilessly right in front of him by a giant spear crashing into him.
This man has had a rough life.
Yeah, and he survives just fine, but he's got a lot of blood on him, and it's not his blood. And he basically feels a lot of shame, falls to his knees, very upset, and he just kind of bursts into anger. And I think it's a combination of just anger and regret and just sadness, because he basically just got his friends killed and couldn't save them. So, as that happens, he just like feels like this power come over him, and boom, he left Theros.
Planes walked away.
Didn't even know it. Typically, the first planes walk, you don't even know it. You're just kind of somewhere else. And you're like, where am I? So he woke up with a giant lion in front of him, with a person riding that lion. Turns out he was on the plane of Alora in the Bant, I guess, place. So yeah. There's different. I don't really know how to describe it. I mean, it's a plane itself is Alora, and then there's like the regions, and so he's in the Bant region.
I know Bant is like a color combination.
Yeah, so Bant, if you don't know, is white, blue, green, and so that's the shard of Alora that they're kind of like, they kind of remind me of like the knights, like 10th century knights, just like knights in shining armor, stuff like that. And they ask for his name, and he goes, you know, my name's Kaitian. And I guess either someone mishears him or they don't understand. So, like, you know, when you go somewhere else, like completely different world, that maybe they don't have those certain consonant sounds like in their language. So they interpret it as Gideon. And so he goes from Kaitian Iora to Gideon Jura.
I can just imagine some dude sitting there like, I know he said what sounds to be this weird combination of words called Kaitian, but like, I like Gideon better. So we're going to call you that.
Yep.
And he's just like, okay, sure.
So then he just kind of, he basically grows up in Bant underneath like their apprenticeship of knighthood. And then, that's basically Gideon's story on Theros. He doesn't actually go back to Theros until they bury him.
Oh, God.
He gets buried on Theros.
So he's literally dead by the time he goes back.
Yeah. And unfortunately, he didn't die on Theros, so he didn't go to the underworld on Theros. Oh, he's just dead. And so they buried him, and if you'll see in a few arts, I think Terra Nica is a card from this last set that actually has Gideon's statue in the background. Like, yeah, his memorial.
The memorial. Oh, yes, because I saw that in the, I forget the card name.
Rest in Peace. So in the Gideon collection, they kind of used some new art, and they had his little Theros memorial on a card to Rest in Peace. But yeah. Gideon's perished.
So something interesting I noticed is some of the things they've done is they kept some things from regular Greek mythology and others they've kind of changed. But this is very Greek mythology to a T. Zeus, really every god, but I like picking on Zeus because he's terrible, comes down and goes, hey man, I need you to do me a favor. He's a god, he can do whatever he wants, but he's going to let a human do it because it involves other gods and he doesn't want to cause a big disturbance. I want you to go kill this person, do this trial, steal this thing, whatever. So the person's like, well, Zeus just told me I had to do it, and you know what? What bad can happen for me? So they go and they do the thing, and then that thing happens to make another god mad. In this case, it was Erebos or Hades, or actually in Greek mythology, there is a primordial being named Erebus. So they make something mad. On, you know, because Zeus asked him to. And then they go and they're like, hey, Zeus, I did this thing for you. This guy's literally about to ruin everything for me. And Zeus is just like, I don't know what you're talking about, bro. I didn't have you do this. Why would you do such a thing? Oh, man, that's terrible. Can you believe this guy?
New phone, who dis?
Yeah, new phone, who dis?
Who are you?
I can't tell you how many times the gods do that to people and then just go, man, I've never met this dude. I can't believe he would do this to you. And then the other god would just, like, murder their family or their friends in this case. And then they would just, some of them would die. Some of them would die pretty terrible things. Some of them would have eternal punishment in the underworld, and some would just, like, essentially go from kings to beggars on the street because they do what ex-god. I like to pick on Zeus because he's the worst about this.
I mean, Zeus is basically like Heliod, like, yeah. Not in the way, like, there is a sun god in Greek culture, right?
Yes, but Zeus is like thunder and light.
Thunder and light, because I know Theros has its own, like, thunder and lightning god. It's Keranos is the god of thunder and lightning.
They play around
with it a lot.
They switched Apollo and Zeus kind of up there, and who's in charge.
Heliod's basically like the Zeus, like, yeah. In the form of he's arrogant, and he's just in charge, and he's just an asshole.
And everyone who ends up with him pays the price in the long term.
Yeah, in some way or another. And so that's going to take us on to our next story. We're going to talk about Elspeth. So Elspeth... The arc that we're about to start is the arc of Theros. So Theros, Journey, Born of the Gods, and Journey of the Nyx were the sets that came out in 2013 and 2014. But that's not actually the first time Elspeth was in Theros. She was in Theros earlier.
For just a little bit. From what I read up on, it was like she was on the plane with Phyrexians originally.
She was on a plane with Phyrexians.
Yeah, yes, originally.
Yes, she was on Mirrodin when it was being besieged. But even before then, she actually did visit Theros.
Yeah.
And that's where she gets her weapon.
Oh, it's the Phyrexians after she goes to Theros.
Yeah.
I know she goes there as like, what is it, like a teenager in the lore or something? Young adult.
Yeah, she's just out like exploring. Like, yeah. She's like, I'm a planeswalker. I'm just going to go planeswalk to places.
And she ends up on Theros and... interestingly enough, ended up there during a battle between
Perforos.
Perforos, thank you. Perforos and Zeus. I mean, not Zeus, Heliod.
Same thing.
Yeah. I like to make that joke. And they're fighting, and Perforos decided he was going to make a weapon that can, you know, harm or even kill a god, supposedly. And so they're in the battle, and they're shaking the world enough that the Hydra comes out, if you can say the name of that.
So this is Polukranos. So Polukranos, pretty iconic figure in both sets. They basically disturb the Earth and wakes up Polukranos, who's real angry. And
he goes on a rampage.
Yeah, he goes on quite the rampage on the mortal realm. But yeah, so he dropped, eventually, the Sword of Chaos.
They wake up a Hydra, and then he drops the sword. Like, essentially, I'm just imagine her walking along... Elspeth walking along, and then boom, there's a god slaying sword right in front of me, just falling from heaven.
And she's like, thank you, okay, bye. And then she takes the sword and planeswalks away. And I'm pretty sure at the time she planeswalks too. I think she's also from Bant. I don't even think we know her origin. I just know it was a plane that was plagued by the Phyrexians, and then she like planes somehow got away. We haven't actually had like an official, I don't think we've had an official origin story for her yet. Maybe in Origins 2, if they ever make a second origin set, that'd be cool.
They could explain that. Yeah.
But she goes to Bant and becomes a knight and all that. But she gets the sword, and so yes, she has a god slaying sword. So that's pretty important to the story as we move on. So that's the first time Elspeth visits the realm of Theros, and then she goes back. So she decides that she wants to go back. And, Heliod makes her his champion.
Which, as we're about to find out, same thing with Gideon. You never really want that title in the long run.
Yeah, you don't really want to be Heliod's champion. So Heliod not only makes her his champion, but he also takes the sword. I'm pretty sure he recognizes the sword.
I think he does.
And then he turns it into a spear for her so she can use it. And I think... basically, so after Polukranos breaks free, Heliod and Nylea seal it back up again, Well, then it breaks out again somehow, and he basically tasks Elspeth to go kill it.
Yes.
If I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah. I think this is where Daxos comes in, correct? It's her and Daxos. She picks up Daxos, and it's their job now to go kill this Hydra that he helped release. So he's like, hey, go clean up my mess for me. And so that's kind of like the beginning of her grand story, from what I understand, on Theros.
So actually, just a quick little refresh here. She actually met Daxos when she first went to Theros. So when she got the Sword of Chaos. But she returned 10 years later, and she encountered Polukranos. She killed Polukranos with the help of Daxos, because he did some things. But
I mean, I imagine killing a Hydra is probably easier with one person, even if you do have essentially a spearmint to kill gods. You're still
she decapitates a few of the Hydra's head, and he, as we can tell from the newer set, he is in the underworld. He went to the underworld, but alongside that, slowly, a little after time, we've got a guy named Xenagos. So Xenagos is another planeswalker. I think his origin is Theros, if I remember correctly. I don't think he's from somewhere else.
I think so, because he's not a centaur, sorry. He's a satyr, I believe. He starts out as like a satyr, and they're like hedonistic. I mean, again, relates. This is one of those straight copied from Greek mythology. They're like hedonistic. Wine, parties, sex, all that kind of fun stuff. That's like what they're about. Life is a giant party. So he actually gets tired of that revelry, correct? And then is just like, I think I'm meant to do something greater. I think all this revelry and all this is just not good enough for me. I want to be better than the gods themselves.
So yeah, so Xenagos actually gets a spark and goes off and just wreaks havoc in other planes, but realizes just how, you know, insignificant he really is in the grand scheme of things. And he just realized that the gods had such power among the plane of Theros that maybe he wanted something like that. So he comes back to Theros. He realized that all the crazy lifestyle that people had was pretty dull. Everybody kind of just stopped doing that once he left. And so he took on a stronger and more intense ambition of joining the gods in the Pantheon.
Which, I have you know that that is a thing that even in Greek mythology never happens. You're born a god or a titan or a primordial being, or you are not one at all.
Yep, and that's what makes theirs different. Anybody can become a god, really. If enough people believe in your power, then you can become anything. And so, looks like Xenagos goes on kind of a rampage as he's trying to procure his reach. And he basically just joins a bunch of forces of monsters together and just sends them to all the cities and just like says, hey, attack all these cities, all these polises.
And reading his story, he's like, he's not bloodthirsty in the sense that we think of, like, he's not out for blood and killing everyone. Nah, dude, just like, he's what I would consider like a very clinical psychopath, in that he's going to the top and he doesn't care how he gets there, even if he has to destroy cities. And so he sent, like, this entire army after the three cities and was like, go, just destroy and fight and pillage and everything like that. And in comes Elspeth.
Well, so before that, he actually, so by just causing pure chaos, since the gods kind of see through their oracles, like their oracles are the ones that, like, hey, this is what's going on. I know you're in Nyx having a house party, drinking some wine and stuff, but hey. This is what's going on. Everything's going crazy. Well, these oracles keep dying, so the gods just kind of go blind into what the real world's happening. And so they're kind of scrambling to kind of restore peace.
Well, Daxos is, he's an oracle of Nyx, correct?
I believe so.
So he probably sounds like he's in some danger.
He's in pretty good peril. So this is when Elspeth comes in, fights against some of his forces, but is actually defeated by a race of Minotaurs. But, her and Daxos, they have a swell old time.
They're like, no, we're not gonna give up. We're gonna stop this whole war here and now, essentially, fighting everything off, protecting cities, things like that.
Yeah, and so they get to know each other even better, and then Zinnigo, seeing that they could pose a potential threat, goes in and meddles. So he actually basically causes Elspeth to kind of go into a trance, like a nightmarish trance.
Yeah.
Which literally, so like, she's just like, is just in Theros 1 second with Daxos. And then all of a sudden she's in Mirrodin again. And there's just this huge Phyrexian obliterator just running towards her, about to kill her. And so what does she do? She pulls out her spear and just leaps at it and just stabs the crap out of it. Little does she know, she wakes up from that and realizes that she just made Daxos a skewer.
Yeah.
And has stabbed him so many times.
Like, I imagine they're sitting there, laying in bed. And she just wakes up, and then just blood everywhere, and Daxos is just lying there. You know, poor Daxos was just sitting there like, hold up a second, why am I currently being stabbed? So that actually was a pretty big turning point for Elspeth, and she, like, I don't want to say, she broke, I guess you could say. She was not having any of it.
And yeah, it really messed her up.
Yeah.
For sure. So after Elspeth kills Daxos on accident, she's just filled with just feelings and immense amount of emotions. And
I imagine after you just killed your loved one.
Yeah, quite literally, as that happens, she like leaves her tent and she like just basically sees Zinnigos ascend to Nyx. Like, he's just ascending.
So it's just like godhood in front of your eyes.
Yeah, and she's just like, basically all the citizens around her in that polis are just like staring down upon her, and she basically just feels like a failure, and she runs into the wilderness and basically hides. She's basically exiled at this point. And
because she meets a Johnny at some point here, I believe.
Yeah, so she's basically exiled until she finds an unexpected ally in the Leonin. So that's Brimaz, which we saw he had a card in what was it? Born of the Gods. He's kind of like the leader of the Leonin. She is reunited with an old friend of Johnny. And Johnny agreed to stay by her side and kind of help her reclaim her glory and her honor and go take on Zinnigos. So Zinnigos ascends to godhood. He does it. He is a god now. Ready to party. Well, that's pretty awkward for all the gods in the party house. In Nyx, because now Zinnigos is here and they don't want to let him in the Nyx, but they got to because he's a god now. So Krufix, who is the oldest of the gods, says, you know, we got to figure this out, guys. I'm basically going to make the silence happen. So he enacts the silence, which is where basically all the gods stopped making contact with the people on Theros. They just kind of just put up a wall. People at Theros don't even know if the gods still exist. They basically just abandon everybody on Theros to their own, to the elements, and just their own warring and all that, just so they could kind of handle Zinnigos at the time. So while the silence is happening, people are, you know, starting to, they're grasping for hope. They, you know, maybe they're looking for signs that the gods are still around. And this is where Kiora enters the story.
Yeah.
So, Kiora, being a planeswalker from Zendikar, witnessed the ravagings on Zendikar and the Eldrazi breaking free and consuming her home world, comes to Theros in search of basically some big beasts. She basically wants to collect them all. She's basically a Pokemon trainer where she just wants to collect big beasts and throw them at Eldrazi.
I mean, that's one way to stop them, I suppose.
Yeah, so she
comes half the time we play.
Yeah, so she comes to Theros in hopes to finding some really awesome like Hydras and some just a big fish, and she basically masquerades herself as
Caliph.
Yeah, she Caliph. So Caliphe, which Caliphe. We actually see her a card of her. She's basically the great navigator. She's like Thassa's oracle,
okay,
basically in a way. And so Caliphe is nowhere to be seen. So Kiora masquerades around as Caliphe, and you're like, I am the deity of Thassa, and listen to me. And she actually meets Elspeth and Ajani, and
as they're on the way to the Temple of Krufix in her Nyx.
Yeah.
There you go.
So they're on their way to Erichsmethes, whatever. And
for simplification, we'll just call it Erichsmethes. Erichsmethes.
Sure, yeah. Sounds good. She's on her way to Erichsmethes, and she's basically the navigator for a Johnny and Elspeth's ship. They're on their way to, and if you don't know what Erichsmethes is, he's actually got a card, and it's actually a giant monster that has a city on top of it that's in the water. So he's actually a card in Commander. He's a blue-green commander. And he enters as a land, and then you remove slumber counters, and then he becomes a giant creature.
Oh, you know, I do remember that card. I completely forgot about him as a card until just now.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But anyways, so they're on their way, and I guess the silence ends, and Thassa's like, what you doing?
Yeah, so that's the part I never understood, where they just like, okay, we're cutting contact for a bit, and then Xenagos was like, I'm in anyways, and they're like, well, I guess he's already in. We might as well just lift this.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Thassa knew something was up.
Okay.
And she just kind of comes back into it, and she goes, hey, you're not Caliphy. I'm not letting you go to Eric Smethy's. I'm not letting you at all.
It's not happening.
I'm going to throw my Leviathans at you, and you're going to die. So then Kiora and Thassa get into this big old battle where they're basically throwing giant sea monsters at each other and just fighting, while like Ajani and Elspeth are like, we don't know how to swim. We're just going to sit in this boat.
Yeah, they raise a boat from the sea, and they're just sitting there like, we don't want any part of this.
Yeah, so basically they have this huge battle, and it ends with, you know, Kiora, as gods, apparently just the theme of this story is just throw their weapons. And so Thassa throws her bident at Kiora and like impales her into a rock.
Oh my god.
And like moves towards her, and like Kiora is just like mumbling to herself, and Thassa's like, what did you say? And Kiora's like, this isn't the only ocean. And Thassa's like, what do you mean? And like takes her bident and like shoves it into her a little farther, and then she giggles, Kiora does, and says, thanks. And Thassa's like, what? And then all of a sudden, Kiora just takes the bident and planeswalks away, like, with it still, like, in her. And she's like, thanks for the bident. I now have a weapon to fight the Eldrazi.
For those of you who grew up on Disney like I did, that's very Ursula of her. Just like, this is my trident now. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and so she basically takes it and says, okay, bye. And so now she has the bident, and Thassa's like real mad, like real, real mad. She's so mad. And then like a story is written about it. Like
she has stories written about how mad she is.
Not how mad she is, but stories are written, probably not by her consent, about how she gets bested by some fish lady. So wow. Yeah, they eventually Thassa's like, whatever, I don't give a crap about you. Just ride in your boat. And so they ride their boat to Eric Smethy's, and they get to meet Krufix.
They meet him, and they're like, hey, you can get us into Nyx, right? Because we're on our way. You got that god problem we've been hearing about, or that new god problem we've been hearing about. We can take care of that, because nothing, you don't even need to do anything for us in return. We just want to kill him, you know, out of personal revenge. And for some reason, he goes, sure, I'm going to let you into Nyx, but it's going to take a trial. I know you're trying to help us and all, but, like, you got to go through a trial. To me, this just is Greek mythology 101. There's got to be a trial somewhere in there. Like, if you don't have a trial, it's not really a Greek story. And he even gave her the courtesy. He was like, you know what? You're trying to help us. I'll even let you choose which god it is that's going to give you your trial. And so, of course, being the very smart person she is, she goes, I choose the god of the underworld, you know, the one who tortures people for a living, Erebos. Because that was the smartest choice she's ever made. Surprisingly, it works out for her, you know, spoiler alert, does work out for her. But still, like, the thought process didn't quite make sense to me. But
So what is the trial?
So we get to that, and they go to Erebos, and he's like, okay, let me think of something. And he goes, okay, I'm not going to tell you what the trial is. You're going to have to go through it, and you're going to have to come out the other side. And she's like, okay, cool. So what he ends up doing is he essentially creates this illusion of a world for her. Think like her with a house and a white picket fence. Daxos is still alive, standing next to her. They've got 2.5 kids.
So like a 50s suburban life.
Yeah. Basically, it's her dream world. Daxos is still alive. They're all happy. She's in love, blah, blah, blah. You know, things to be like, can you come back for this? And she goes, for a while. It's not like a length of period of time, but it's not an immediate thing. She's like, this is pretty nice. I could deal with this. Then, you know, to her better judgment, she goes, you know, gives out a little sigh and goes, this is great. I love it. It's not real. And in fact, the thing that gets her is not the fact that it's not real, but the fact that she knows she has greater responsibility on the other side. So she rejects this world. And that's that itself is the trial, is just being like, I can't, I've got to go back, I've got to stop Xenagos, and so I can't stay here. And so, boom, world dissolved, and Erebos is like, congratulations, you did it, welcome to Nyx.
Gold Star puts a sticker on her, just like, cool. Good job, you did it.
Yeah, you're still, you didn't break down and, you know, stay in there forever. I applaud you for not doing that. And essentially, that's just, that was the trial, and here you go, you're in Nyx now.
So now they're in Nyx. So they're basically the god pest detectives. Like they're here to get rid of the pest, and the pest is one of the gods. So yeah. They're here to take him out.
It's a large scale job.
Yeah, no, he's a big old boy.
Sorry, let me add a correction. It in the lore, it's not actually Daxos. It's just a random dude she's never met.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so let me correct my statement there, because I for sure thought it was Daxos, but no, it's just like she's back on Bant, married to a random guy that she seemingly loves, and they have like a little girl together. So she goes in full of righteous fury to Nyx, as you would say. I don't think there's a lot of context in the battle. Like, I think, like, if it were a movie, it'd be a really flashy piece that doesn't have a lot of story, you know? Or, like, a book, it'd be like, oh, okay, they battled it out.
Yeah.
But essentially, yeah, she takes her spear and is just, like, stabs him straight with it. And
so it seems like following the theme, she actually throws it at him.
Oh, I missed that.
So she throws the spear into his chest.
That's always worked out, you know, 100% of the time so far.
So way back before he ascended to godhood, Nylea had actually shot an arrow at Xenagos as he just kind of like ascends. So this arrow is actually inside of him.
Oh my god.
And so the spear goes right through him and just like hits the arrowhead, which like basically causes it to explode. The arrow literally explodes inside of him, and all of his internal organs turn to shreds.
Oh my god.
So yes, so Xenagos dies in Nyx. Big important thing here. Since he died in Nyx, he didn't die in Theros, so there was no underworld for Nyx.
So he's just gone. So he's dead.
Yeah, he's real dead. So Xenagos basically bursts like a confetti cannon and just dies, and the day is saved. So as Xenagos, his lifeless body confettied around, falls from the heavens, Elspeth says a prayer.
To Xenagos, and she's like, hey, I know I just killed you, and you're probably really mad about that, but I'm going to offer my life in trade to, you know, you kill me, take my life, bring Daxos back. She really liked Daxos. Again, This again, not her brightest moment. It's the same thing with Erebos. You choose the guy that you just killed, and you're like, hey, I got a deal for you. I know I just killed you. So she offers that deal, and Xenagos goes, you bet you. I will gladly do that. So they do make this pact, but she doesn't die immediately. What ends up happening is, you remember how I said earlier that being a champion of any of the gods usually ends poorly. I bring that, that was a very important part earlier, because they very much stick to that part of the story. You help the gods, they're like, hey, thanks, you really helped me out there, and then they leave you to whatever punishment happens by the other god that you made mad, or whatever, you know, you lost all your riches, or your entire family died, whatever. Yeah. You'd think Elspeth, oh, that's a poor deal. She didn't even get to that part yet. We're not even gonna... Because here comes Heliod doing his slow clap, evil bad guy walk in. Like, oh, thanks! You killed Xenagos for us. Oh my god, we appreciate it so much. Hey, cool spear, let me see that for a second. I made this for you. And he holds it and he's like, yeah, I really did. I did a pretty good job on forging this into a spear, and then he just straight stabs her.
Yeah, right, like, through the breastplate, like just straight up kills her, and right in front of a Johnny, and Johnny's mm-hmm. like, bro, what?
Like, hold on a second. What just happened? Yeah, and this is not part of the deal with Xenagos. Like, while that deal is made, her death due to that does not happen. So, she... It's, like, partially implemented. And I'll get to that in a second. But, so, as she's dying... I should mention by this point they're out of Nyx. This is important to the story. They're back on, you know, Gaia Earth, Theros, if you will. And he stabs her, and she's like, "Thanks, I've always hated you," and kills her with her own spear. And then just like, "Thanks for the spear, bye, this is the godslaying weapon, it's mine now." And she lays there dying, and then she falls to the underworld, because they're no longer Nyx. So she's actually down there, and Erebos is like, "I kinda live up to that deal you made. But instead of fully doing it, I'm gonna kinda twist and turn it, you know, again, very Greek god. I'm not gonna give you exactly what you asked for. I'm gonna monkey's paw it." So he brings back Daxos as a returned, you know, golden mask on, doesn't remember who he is, might as well be a zombie. So at the end of that's the original Theros?
Yeah.
The last Theros set. That's kind of where it ends off with Elspeth's story and Daxos becoming the return.
Yeah, so Heliod kills Elspeth, not only because he's an asshole and he's evil, he's also afraid of Elspeth. So he just witnessed her kill another god. So he's like, "Bro, I can't keep her around, because what if she kills me next?" So he just takes the precautionary leap of just killing her first. And so that becomes very important as we go into the next step here, which is the story for Theros beyond tuna salad.
Beyond tuna salad. beyond the underworld. There we go.
Yep. So that concludes today's episode of us talking about Theros lore. Join us next week where we talk about Theros beyond turkey bacon, where we jump through the lore of the newest set and discuss some of magic's lore in general. So I hope you enjoyed this slightly different episode of more of a lore-based focus. And we'll see you guys next time. Peace out.